720 WGN, Dane Neal, Hannah Stanley in for Steve Cochran today on New Year's Eve. And on the line with us, we do have attorney Karen Conti. Before she gets into the end of year planning,
we want to say first that Karen is sponsored by Chicago Title Land Trust Company. And we are excited to welcome you back, Karen. Thanks for sticking with us.
One of the things, and we've talked about the privacy of your own home and whatever kind of assurances or comforts that you may have there. And but now we found out that this year, you know, under the Christmas tree and with your kids as they play the Xbox in the room with you during that private and wonderful moment is the Lizard Squad, that they're there with you too. And so on the internet side, as you and other attorneys try to like make sense of what's going on in the world globally, and we want to find out what kind of recourse people have when they're either hacked or their finances are hacked or their accounts are hacked. It seems like you're just kind of screwed. Karen?
There she is. Hi.
You really are. And it's unfortunate because I get so many calls a week by people saying they've had their identity stolen, they've been hacked, and there's really no good avenue. There's no good avenue to clean up credit reports. And there are companies that do it, and I'm not sure I can recommend any of them because some of them are good, some of them aren't. And you know, these are issues that I think the law has been slow to catch up. You know, our laws have not caught up with the idea we have all this technology now. And the prosecution of these kind of crimes is difficult because we don't know who they are, and it's hard to trace them. And, you know, the FBI is on some of these people, but it's a very difficult thing to do. I mean, if the Korean government can hack into Sony, and I don't know if that's the case, but if they can, then you can imagine what they can do to the average citizen. So these are very difficult things, but I think taking precaution is probably the best thing. We don't think it's going to happen to us, but it can and it will. So we have to take the precautions that are available to us.
All right, Karen, can you go through some of our New Year's resolution stuff that we need to make sure we focus on for 2015 to get everything in order?
Absolutely. I'm going to do this quickly because I know you're on time limit. And if you want to email me, I can send you an email with these bullet points. The first thing I always say is get your papers in place. You know, folders, making folders is a really good thing for tax purposes so that everything in the year can go into income. It can go into expenses. It can go into write-offs, charitable deductions. So you have those folders all ready to go. There's no need to put them in a pile. Get your papers in one place. Put all your insurance in one place, your car insurance, your health insurance, your renter's insurance. Put all your stuff together, your will, your trust. Hopefully you have a will, which I'm going to get to. So get your papers together so if something were to happen to you or you have an emergency or a claim on your insurance, you've got all that information right there. Also, if something were to happen to you permanently, like you became ill, disabled, or died, God forbid, you'd have it all there. You'd have all the bank account numbers. You have all the phone numbers. You have your will. So that's number one. Number two is update your will. Or if you don't have one, get one. There's no reason in this day and age that you can't get a will or a trust that takes care of your estate when you die. And everyone says, I don't have enough. I don't have anything to leave to anybody. That doesn't mean that people aren't going to fight over what happens when you die. Even your emails, what happens to your emails? You need to specify. Does someone go through your emails? Do they get deleted automatically? What happens to your iTunes? What happens to your Kindle books? These are things that a good lawyer can whip through and get done for you, so it's a done deal and you don't have to worry about it. So those are my top two. Want me to tell you some more?
You know what? I do, but we are running short on time. Can you give out your email address so people can touch base with you and get a hold of you if they want you to do those things for them?
Absolutely, and I'm going to set forth, you know, in the email if you want me to send anyone who wants it some other good ideas about what to do to protect yourself in the new year. My email address is kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com, and my phone number is 312-332-7800.
7800. Karen Conti, thank you so much for joining us. Hope to talk to you again soon. In the meantime, Happy New Year to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
Yeah, that's a New Year's Eve song if I've ever heard it.
It's got kind of a countdown theme to it. It's got sort of like a
and
something's
a trickle.
Coming.
That's nice. Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in for Steve Cochran today and tomorrow. And joining us in studio, part of our New Year's Eve celebratory show, is Lisa Donovan, Red Eye News Editor. Good morning.
Good morning.
This has been a huge year in news.
It is, and I can't believe it's over already. I mean,
Hopefully we don't
have
anything.
Not to start on a negative note, but I do feel like we've lost a few Chicago icons I have to touch on. First of all, we covered obviously the loss of Jane Byrne, who passed away this year, Chicago's first and only female mayor in Chicago to date.
Thus far, yes.
Mm-hmm. Thus far. Keep going, girls. and then we also lost, I think, another kind of Chicago icon, Hot Dogs. I think the owner, Doug Sohn, he not only put out this great food, but he was a great ambassador of sorts, really. I mean, all these tourists would come in, and I just think he was sort of part of this fabric of Chicago, even if he wasn't around 50 years. He just became part of the city that people sought out beyond sort of maybe the other tourist traps around and about. And so
certainly, on the food side, as people look at Chicago as a food thing, like Doug was one of those,
guys.
A tourist attraction. Yeah.
And I think he was a foodie, but I think he was an approachable. There was no snobbery there. He was a down-to-earth Chicago guy that you stood in line forever, and you got there, and he had a minute to chat with you about anything. Where'd you go for vacation? How were your kids? I mean, he's just such, you felt like he was a friend. And I think everybody did.
That's exactly it. So many people felt that way as well. And for him to have shut the business down on a whim, I mean, it was his own deal. He didn't have a reason to. He didn't lose his lease.
Right.
But kind of demonstrated that he was like a Chicago guy and he was going to go out on his own terms.
And go out on top, right?
Yep.
If you're getting burned out and you've got that kind of, I don't know, brand, you want to go out on top if you want to do something else. You don't want to get sick of it. You don't. And I have no idea whether he was, but if he wants to do something else, then he should. But definitely go out on top.
On the prediction side, and Andy can speculate on this probably later, is I don't know if it was a whim. He did give a lot of fans, and I think that was considered. He wanted to make a change, but he gave people a lot of time plan their trip down there to visit him.
Was it spring? I think he put out a notice on his website, sort of, these are the vacation dates, permanent vacation starts October, I can't remember,
28th or something
like that. And so it was very typical Doug Sohn. I mean, it was hilarious, but it was like, what? Is this a joke? You know, what's going on? So, very sad.
And to lump him in with the passing of Jane Byrne is a little bit different because, he's got a tremendous business success. The whole world, his future is open to him. Do you have any kind of ideas? Did he ever say, I want to go hang gliding or I want to, climb the Matterhorn?
In talking to him, I know that he loves traveling. So I suspect that he's doing a little bit of that. He is doing some promotion on the existing Twitter feed for the business. There's a lot of promotion for this Foodseum looking at building. I think a few reports said it was going to be this next year.
Yeah, I think it's 2015-2016 opening.
So there's some fundraising going on. And so I don't know if he will be part of that. I mean, in one way or another, he'll be part of it because he's part of sort of our food map of the city, so and history and all those things. So definitely, I think you'll see him emerge somewhere. I just don't know. I'm wondering whether it will be another restaurant. I suspect maybe not.
This is off topic, but considering we were just talking about the Foodseum, I'm very interested because many museums have wings or areas, and I think that the Foodseum should just have stands. Like, this is our hot dog stand.
Yeah, exactly.
Our iBeef stand. Just go over here and
like
hang
micro
out.
Food trucks.
Yes.
Revolving micro food trucks.
All right. So what else happened? We've got so many things.
So many things. We started off the year with this polar vortex that sent everybody indoors. Schools were canceled. Looks like we're getting a little taste of that today.
I'm sorry. Knocking on wood.
And up and down kind of year, it seemed like we had kind of a lot of bad news, Ebola, scary things going on in the world. We had the police involved shootings of men in both Missouri and New York.
The Florida shooting.
Exactly. And so what you've seen and you continue to see are a lot of protests nationwide, including Chicago. They don't seem to be abating. This is sort of, it's sustained. It's in neighborhoods. And so I think it'll be interesting to follow this because I don't see it ending. And I think that some conversations and policy changes probably are in the works.
Well, you mentioned conversations and policy changes. Is that hopefully where things will go so that everybody kind of is comfortable, everybody is kind of comfortable with whatever their relationship with the police is? Or do you see this being, you know, these are kind of the precursors of some other bigger, even more kind of negative tragedy situation as there's kind of another clash or conflict?
I mean, I think that it's probably incumbent on city leaders to have this discussion with community leaders. And I can't predict what will happen. But I do think that people feel disenfranchised, and I think that they want to be part of the conversation. They feel like there's, you know, two sets of rules for people in the city. And so there's going to have to be a discussion with city leaders and stakeholders in these communities to get it, you know, how do we resolve this? And I don't think it happens in a year. I don't think it happens in 2017. You know, I think it's years.
Well, and we have quite a disparity in our city because we have people protesting about these police shootings that have happened throughout the country. And yet 4th of July was one of the heaviest gun violence weekends, not police involved. I mean, people were shooting other people. And so this is something we were just talking to Karen Conti about this as well. We have laws that are supposed to protect our citizens, and they're not necessarily even being enforced. They're definitely being ignored. So this is a deeper discussion, especially here in Chicago.
Absolutely, about crime and you know, socioeconomics. I mean, we could be here for hours to discuss sort of how
we've got time. Yeah. We're good. We're here till 10.
So, I mean, it's a larger discussion. Crime is one part of it. Taking a wider view, I'm watching The Wire now. And so you kind of get all these sort of issues sort of wrapped into one. It's education, it's crime, it's even how our media covers this stuff and presents it. And we're all part of it. It's a reminder to take what we do very, very seriously.
We are going to take a quick break, come back with news, and of course, keep up to date on what's going on with the South Loop fire, among other stories we've been following. Lisa Donovan will again join us on the other side as well to continue wrapping up our 2014 news in review time with her. How nice. Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in for Steve Cochran. More after this on WGN.
720 WGN. Dane Neal, Hannah Stanley in for the Steve Cochran Show on New Year's Eve. And we are not alone. We've got our great able-bodied staff here with us. We've got Steve, we've got Andy, and we've got Lisa Donovan from
news editor of the Red Eye. We were talking about 2014 stories in review. Something about the music selection today from Jasmine's making me feel like I should be in some sort of a sequined little cocktail dress, and I'm going to work on that after the 8 o'clock hour.
Strangely
we'll
enough,
see if Nordstrom's
too.
Is open. I know, which is good. We have a texter say 8415. Dick Portillo also sold the business. That is huge.
It is huge, but it's still here. And still around, and but yeah, that was a big changeover.
And now not a Chicago company managing it,
right?
It is very strange because as big as Portillo's is, and is kind of identifiable as it is with Chicago, it's one of the really rare things because he owned them all. It wasn't a franchise situation,
right? And I mean, what does it become like Goose Island then?
Yes,
it's still going to be. It's still a Chicago institution, but it's.
Still good IB. Right.
Well, the hot dogs are made here, but the beer's made for New York, at least part of it. So
we had this happen so many years ago when Frango Production left the State Street location for Marshall Fields and went to like Pennsylvania. Absolutely, the flavor, very nuanced, but it changed. The water was different. It's going to taste different. And so, I mean, the thing is, Portillo's are still going to stay in the places that they are, but it's not going to be managed by a Chicago company.
Right, and the feeling changes, doesn't it? I mean, it just sort of, it feels different.
We don't have ownership of it.
Yeah, right. It's not something we can say, oh, this is ours, or our guy owns this. Especially sort of when you see, I think some of the time that's a shame because you go downtown in the Loop and 10 years ago you could see sort of an independent or at least locally owned business, and now it's all chain restaurants. And so you lose a little bit of your identity,
I think. A nod to the success of what we've put together, but it also is kind of frustrating because you're like, well, I mean, it's great that they were successful enough that they could sell out to... Sure. But are they in fact selling out?
I think a testament to the fact that Portillo's has been so successful. I mean, it's elevated fast food for what it is because, sure. you know, he's been so hands on. He could have sold, you know, a million times before now. And but yeah, you're missing something. I hope he decides to stay around. We the kids drive by. We drive by Portillo's Manor.
Yeah,
his house that's right. over there in Oakbrook, and we see it. They love it. He's got big presents outside.
Which and it's nice too because he has staffers standing outside.
That's the way they do it. Yeah. The mailman comes up. He's like, "What you got?"
I have to say, I know that they're known for their hot dogs, but oh, their Italian beef.
Yeah. The beef is great. God, it's fantastic. It's couple other things that have really shaped, or at least led the news here, or you know, talk in the hallway at least. The docudrama, and I'll call it a drama, of Chicagoland, which was a huge story as it developed, huge as it was going on, and then it became huge when they realized there was it wasn't necessarily so much documentary.
Right. I think the Tribune made some requests for some emails back and forth with CNN, and it... sort of when you got done reading that story after watching the documentary about that kind of follows Rahm Emanuel and his time, his first sort of months in office and years in office and tackling crime and education.
And the gun violence and education.
Yes, exactly. I think it felt a little bit more that like it was staged. Then and I don't know if people after you read that story, you felt maybe it was a little more staged. I think the background is reporters know that at some point you have to cajole people, and the mayor's office is very buttoned down here. It's they are on message, on point. They very rarely deviate from that. It's very difficult to have an off the cuff conversation with the mayor, and so I'm sure there was a lot of cajoling. That's not to apologize for it, because I think some of the stuff might have been over the line. But
that is, I mean, from professional wrestling to modern day public reality programs, we all know that there's a good portion of it that is edited to a certain degree to get the result they want, to set up drama, to do something. I mean, the Real Housewives of anywhere.
Well, I'm just going to say, yeah.
That's all crazy. Yeah. So essentially, Rahm was just a real house husband of Chicago.
Right, but you want more. You expect more.
Especially
you know,
from CNN.
There and watch Real Housewives of New Jersey. Okay, sure. It's some of that's baloney, but... if you're going to
really?
Put this on, I mean, you know,
spoiler alert.
I'm sorry.
Dane. I'm sorry.
I'll turn on that. I think we expect more. If you're going to tell me CNN, this is a documentary, I expect more. It's a journalism organization. It's a news organization. And I want to know that this is the real deal, that you're interviewing somebody just as you would walk up to somebody on a breaking news story. Right. Maybe that's not a fair expectation because it's a documentary, but that's my expectation.
I will tell you, I don't have a problem with the fact that the mayor's office, the city of Chicago, made requests. You can ask. It doesn't hurt to ask. Where I took exception was the fact that CNN was presenting this as sort of unfiltered access to a person in a administration that is so buttoned up, that is so on point. I mean, that extends long before he was chief of staff for
Absolutely.
Obama, and that continued through Obama, which is why you rarely got a poor soundbite from Obama, because if you got it, it was prepped.
Right. And the thing is that today's elected leaders need to step back and remember, you are elected by the people. Your salary is paid by the people. And I think that there is sort of, I don't know, this power grab. It's always been part of politics. I'm not naive to that. But I think at some point, everybody needs to step back and say, hey, you know, I work for the people. I'm going to answer any question that you have, media or the public.
It would be refreshing.
It would be refreshing to have an off the cuff conversation and not feel like, I mean, I know when I was doing, I wrote for the Sun-Times, and I know I would get questions. Well, what's this story going to be about? What's this going to be about?
Like, I don't know yet.
This is one of the things you learn in J school. I don't need to tell you what my story is going to be about or what the angle is. I'm asking a question. You need to answer it.
It's kind of a double-edged sword, and working in the industry where you've gone through the time periods where people, you know, the public would believe anything that was in the newspaper, they'd believe anything on television.
Right.
And then you have the whole internet thing where so many people have a platform for opinion, which I think is really important too. Here's the thing is, what people have, I think people now are taking everything with kind of a grain of salt, you know, whether they're jaded to it.
Which we're
going to
talk about in a minute.
Well, a lot of grains. Right. Whether they're yeah, jaded right. to it, you know, where they say like, okay, we can't believe anything. And I think that's why it's the importance of traditional print media and to raise those standards where you have at least some what you would consider to be trusted sources. Because I think on the Chicago thing is that, you know, that is people's perception. Not everyone can be here. And so everyone's perception of what is going on in Chicago and whether our identity is a great food scene or whether it's kids being shot in the streets. You know, nothing is everything, you know, and I think that if we can get that message out and have it be accurate, it's important.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. The other thing before we let you go, social media, and Dane was absolutely just bringing this up as well, has really driven how media covers stories and kind of how the stories even evolve.
Absolutely. I mean, just to sort of jump back to what we were talking about, the Ferguson case, really, really, that story hit mainstream media outlets, newspapers, television, because of this huge push through social media. This is a small town in Missouri. There, you know, you're close to St. Louis, granted,
ish.
But this this was a story that really came about because of the Wall Street Group, Anonymous. All these various organizations really getting out there and just taking to Twitter, you know, not, you know, day after day, hour after hour after hour.
And driving this story to become what it became.
Correct.
Because I think it would have, while tragic and upsetting and definitely needed to force conversations, it would not have been what it was.
Correct.
5 years ago or so.
Well, and what you're seeing on those things is you're seeing these stories not be the local news stories that they were. It's where everyone kind of decides how it relates to them and their situation.
Exactly. Exactly.
And also carrying over other situations that they're still angry about Florida, and they're still angry
Absolutely.
About other things. All right, Lisa Donovan, news editor for the Red Eye. You can find those where great newspapers are carried, really.
Absolutely.
Everywhere.
And we're at redeyechicago.com. So
right.
if you don't have time to pick us up at one of our nice red boxes, you can go online.
All right. Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in for Steve Cochran. Oh, now it's like a New Year's Eve lounge.
Hannah, it is, kind of.
Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal celebrating New Year's Eve in place of the Steve Cochran Show. I have a feeling that they're maybe already out at Rouse Center prepping for the 3 p.m. show. There's a lot of work that goes into that.
Well, you got to set up the lighting rigs. You've got to, you know, you've got the dancers going through their paces. You've got wardrobe, you know, with all the costume changes.
Wait a minute. You're suggesting that Steve Cochran's going to be early to...
No, not him. No.
Something?
No. His private jet will
oh, yeah,
arrive.
His people.
Yeah. The people who make it all happen. You know, you've got to make it right. The smoke show, the laser lights.
Make it right. Isn't that Lou Manfredini?
Is it?
I think that's what he says. All right. So speaking of things that I have no idea what we were speaking about, but Red Eye for sure had a very funny perspective and put together a nice compilation for us that we're going to bogart. The Morton Salt Wall collapsed. The Morton Salt plant that pretty much everybody is driven by. You can see it, I think, from the Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That went kaboom yesterday. It just fell on over. I don't know if it's because there was too much road salt in that plant and they didn't expect it.
One of the fire fighters said his suggestion was that they piled the salt too high against that wall, the south wall, and that's why it collapsed.
There's a physics issue, and I mean, that's just beyond my math abilities at this point in the morning, at least. I'm going to need an abacus to get into that. However, it collapsed. If you have not seen this, we have the pictures up at WGNradio.com. You can check those out. It it is like, it's almost like you're looking at a miniature thing, mm-hmm. because it's like you just dumped over the whole bunch of salt. Oh, but wait, there's cars underneath it. It covered, I think, 11 cars, some of which were new. And we've been hearing reports that some had been taken to the Acura dealership to be repaired.
It's a lot of salt. Salt can be heavy, you know, when it's in quantity. Of course, we know that. I was surprised that they, you know, they had so much of it. They piled it up. At first I didn't realize that it was road salt. You think of Morton salt, you think of the blue container, you think of the, mm-hmm. you know, the little girl with the umbrella, and you think of sprinkling, you know, a decent amount on your, in moderation, on on your food. And then my first thought was the hygiene issues of, like, what were they going to do with that salt? Are they going to just, did they just throw it into the things? Did they wash it first? How do they do that? It's road salt. And I think the pros and cons of this are that nobody was hurt, number one, you know, because somebody could have been hurt. And then number two, that we haven't needed the salt because there's no snow.
Mm-hmm. Please understand that we would not be making light of this if someone had been hurt. However,
are you sure there's not a car, like a porter out there? Hey, go wash the Mazda, and then he's,
no, I don't think so. I mean, if
no
nothing
one's
else,
for
he's,
him.
He's very exfoliated at this point. So here is the thing: Red Eye did everyone on Earth a favor and put together a compilation of the punniest tweets that came out of yesterday's salt wall collapse. Tiki Ambassador tweeted, talk about rubbing salt into a wound, a massive spill at the Morton Salt Plant.
It made national news. I mean, it was on all over the place.
Yes. At Jody Lurie tweeted, I knew my giant shoulder would come in handy someday. There was another person who tweeted that the cleanup would be going a lot faster if they wouldn't keep throwing it over their shoulders. the Morton Salt Girl going to need more than an umbrella.
Oh, definitely.
Some, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you.
When it rains, it pours is, in fact, their slogan.
You've got umbrellas and rain at this point. I'm surprised because you've got to think there's some value to that salt. It's a decent amount of salt there. Do they have a tarp over it? Because if it did start to rain, what would they do?
Well,
you
know,
one
would,
giant brick?
It would just melt. It would just dissolve. But it'd be like one giant just throw in some tequila, you got a nice little margarita happening. Diddly Squat tweeted, they just keep that salt loose like that? Not very kosher, Morton.
Yeah, that's,
again,
that's what we're thinking.
This is the road salt division
mm-hmm.
of the plant, which I didn't know that that's what happened there. Did anyone here in this room know that that's what they kept there?
Today's Clean Road brought to you by Morton Salt. You know, or Traction. Morton style.
All right. Someone else is tweeting that it is not road salt. It's the salt that is sold for home use in bags. We've been hearing it's road salt. I've been hearing that. Maybe I'm just making that up. Sometimes that happens. I don't know. Jeremy Adam Ross says, you don't often hear some salt damage. Rust maybe, but not actual salt damage. I want to know, though, because, you know, we all get the road salt that's on our shoes, you know, when we walk around and stuff. Mm-hmm. So do we have to go clean this up with a whole bunch of white vinegar? Is that how we're going to get these salt stains off the street, off those cars?
For people who drive by there, 312-981-7200, have they started to clean it up? How are they going to clean it up? I mean, do you just shovel it? Do you suck it up with a giant, you know, kind of a vacuum
shop
device?
Vac?
I'm just thinking, I don't know.
I'm telling you, I mean, if you have not seen the pictures, I'm shocked if you haven't seen the pictures because they're everywhere. David Parrish has tweeted several Acura dealership cars peppered with salt.
Mm.
Yes, clever. Very good.
At the end of it, somebody from the dealership said those cars are probably totaled, though, because of the weight on the suspensions.
And the water retention.
Yeah.
That's bad, too.
You wonder on the insurance side if your policy includes this kind of salt damage. Now, I mean, that's one thing that's sort of funny. But, Steve, you had mentioned that some of them were in for repairs, some of those cars. This would be, if you were looking for a new car, to have something like this happen, this is pretty awesome.
Might make you pretty salty, though.
Yeah,
it might make you pretty salty. And Andy rolls his eyes at what I say.
Exactly. Because I didn't say it. That's why.
All righty. These continue, of course, and we might touch upon these again in a little while. I'm not sure. However, in the meantime, we are going to take a break. We have to follow up with Dave Schwann and figure out what is coming up in the news about the fire. Still continuing.
And when we come back from the break, we've talked a lot of sports. The Bears are heading into a new era. A lot of teams, not the Bears, unfortunately, going to be in the playoffs coming up after the break. The guy who has called Super Bowls for the Bears and for the Packers, Wayne Larrivee, will be joining us.
Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in for Steve Cochran. More after this.
720. WGN, Dane Neal, Hannah Stanley, in for Steve Cochran. We've got a couple more Morton salts. Salting it, I guess, sprinkling it into the wounds of
sprinkling in, being rubbed into the wound. 630 texted in, I heard that the Acura dealership filed assault charges against Morton.
Clever.
There was another one that said, thank goodness it wasn't next to a Duracell factory, because then it would have been, wait for it, assault and battery.
Wow.
I know. Well, these aren't mine, people.
Bears fans may feel
don't
that,
send those letters.
That over at Hallis Hall, they've been assaulting the fans with losses over the
I see what you did
the past few years. A lot of activity going on there. None of it including playoff preparation, at least at this point. But on the line, we've got the voice of the Green Bay Packers, but also 20 years as the TV voice for the Chicago Bulls. He spent a decade as the voice for the Bears and is one of the few guys to call Super Bowl championships for the Packers and the Chicago Bears. It is Wayne Larrivee. Wayne, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you guys.
So, Wayne, we've Andy's talked about it during some of the sports breaks, is that they are on this whole get the right GM, get the guy in place. Ernie, of course, they've got him in there to go ahead and help pick the next person who's going to do that. As a person who's worked for both organizations, and whether Bears fans are rivalry aside, they've got to be envious at the organization that you guys have up there in Green Bay. So how important is it to get the right person in the GM spot?
Well, the successful organizations, you know, they have that. That's the first thing you do, is you get the general manager in place. He selects the coach, and the you know, usually what you want is the GM and the coach, the guy who's acquiring talent, scouting talent, bringing, you know, making the decisions on free agents. You need him in concert with your head coach, and usually that's how it works in the NFL. GM first, and then you hire the coach.
Wayne, are you surprised at all? I mean, you've been around that Hallis Hall for a while, and now up in Green Bay, that you know, maybe they didn't restructure what they were thinking, especially the front office with Ted Phillips, who's a tremendous businessman. And you wonder about the football acumen, if there maybe shouldn't have been a guy that took over that side of things, kind of like the Cubs did with Theo Epstein.
Well, you know, I mean, you've got to find the right person for that. I think what the Bears are doing with Ernie, of course, he is a good move, because he's a good football man and has been a GM of an NFL championship team in the past. And so I think he'll be able to identify candidates that make sense for the Bears. But it's a delicate mix. I mean, you look at the great organizations, you know, in Baltimore, you've got Ozzie Newsome. He hires and basically fires the coaches and acquires the talent. In Pittsburgh, they have the same setup. You know, Mike Tomlin worked for a GM, of course, in Green Bay. The football setup has been very well defined over the last two decades since Bob Harlan put in place a general manager, and that general manager then hires the coach, and the football operation operates independent of the rest of the team, for the most part, of the rest of the organization. The business side is there basically to put the financial structure in place so that football can doesn't have any restrictions as to acquiring talent and winning on the field.
Well, one of the things that's been good about those organizations, you can look to the Patriots over the years, and certainly the Packers too, is that they're not making splashes with high-priced free agents, getting those name players. It's like the farm system is really one of the important things, and the financial side is so important to that. You want to get really good players and then be able to get them cheap, right, for the first and kind of that bulk of the first part of their career.
Well, the Patriots are an exception because Bill Belichick does it all. So, you know, and it's obvious that the people that have fallen off the Bill Belichick tree have not been successful, including those in the front office. Thomas Dimitroff, who's a Belichick disciple in the front office down at Atlanta, he's probably the next to lose his job down there. But, you know, the coaches have not distinguished themselves, with the exception of Saban, that I could really say Nick Saban, and he's on the college level off the Belichick tree. That's a unique situation, and they do it in many ways. They not only draft, but they also will trade. They are the one team that does a lot of trades at the trading deadline over the years, and they will also do some free agency, although not the big first, second-day free agent acquisitions like Daniel Snyder does in Washington. You know, most organizations, what you want to do is you do want to grow your own, but draft and develop takes time, and you have to make the right decisions. And the key to all these teams that are successful that we're talking about here, in the case of the Packers, it's been quarterback. In the case of the Patriots, quarterback. Same thing in Indianapolis. Same thing in Pittsburgh. What do these organizations have in common? Above everything, they have great quarterbacks in place.
Hannah Stanley, Dane Neal, we are talking with Wayne Larrabee, and we'll continue so, but first we have to... Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in today for Steve Cochran, and we'll be with you tomorrow as well. This is our celebratory New Year's Eve show.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. We are going to continue covering that fire that is in the South Loop affecting several restaurants, and then we're going to be joined by Courtney Crowder talking about 2014 television shows.
People all over the world are looking forward to 2015. People all over the country, sports fans, NFL football fans looking forward to the playoffs. Not a lot of people in Chicago looking forward to the playoffs, but looking forward
playoffs.
I know.
Playoffs.
Thanks, Jim Mora.
But I'm looking forward to a bright future as some of those moves have been made. We've got a guy on the line that is part of one of those organizations that is playing consistently during playoff time. It is the one and only Wayne Larrabee. Welcome back.
Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, Wayne, I wanted to ask you about something that that you probably, well, obviously you saw last weekend up there in, at Lambeau with Ndamukong Suh, and he did not get suspended. After all, he appealed, and they fined him $70,000. Today, his defense was his feet were numb, and he couldn't tell the difference between the turf and Aaron Rodgers' leg. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, when I saw it at first, I kind of felt the same way Walt Anderson did, the referee, and that, you know, he was kind of getting blocked into him and that type of thing, and I didn't think a whole lot of it. I know Aaron Rodgers' reaction would tell you otherwise, but you know, I didn't think they would suspend him. I thought, you know, maybe they might fine him. But his reputation preceded him, and the league wanted to suspend him. But, you know, the process, due process, the appeal was made. And, you know, they decided to fine him instead of suspend him. But, you know, that's as far as the Packers are concerned, that's water under the bridge, and they're on to other things.
What part does his reputation play into either the suspension or other penalties?
Well, the league says it had nothing to do with that incident, but I think, you know, in a situation like that, you're not in the court of law. So, you know, I think those factors were considered when they suspended him, yes.
We wanted to ask you, too, the reputation, of course, of Jay Cutler has kind of preceded itself and led into things. On the quarterback side, for the Green Bay Packers, you've got Brett Favre, you know, a first-ballot Hall of Famer. You've got Aaron Rodgers, who's possibly even better. How does that happen? When you look at the Bears, Jay Cutler statistically is probably the best quarterback outside of Sid Luckman, right, that the Bears have ever had. How have the Packers been so lucky, and how can the Bears find a quarterback like that?
Well, you know, they got...
is there a quarterback store? Quarterback.com?
You know, I mean, San Francisco did not pick Aaron Rodgers first in the 2005 draft. It was between Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith, and you know, San Francisco decided to pass up, made a decision. Mike McCarthy, who is now the head coach of the Packers, was a part of that decision-making process that year in San Francisco. They selected Alex Smith, and, you know, the rest is history. Alex Smith, unfortunately, had four different offensive coordinators his first 4 years in the league. Aaron Rodgers came to Green Bay. The Packers didn't need to draft a quarterback, but they were picking 24th that year, and Aaron Rodgers kept sliding to them. By the time he got down to 24, it was a no-brainer, and although the Packers didn't need a quarterback at the time, they took him because he was by far the highest-rated player on their board, and the rest is history, you know. So the moral of the story is when you're drafting, don't draft for need. Draft for the best player that's on your board, the highest-rated player on your board, even if you have a player at that position, because you never know with football down the road what might happen. So that's really how it happened with the Packers. Rodgers fell to 24 in that draft, and they just could not pass him up. So they selected him. He sat 3 years. The best thing to happen to him was Mike Sherman got fired, and Mike McCarthy, ironically, got hired. And Mike McCarthy's a strong quarterback coach and teacher, and he basically took 3 years while Brett Favre was finishing his time at Green Bay, took 3 years and built Aaron Rodgers.
Well, the fan base, obviously, Brett Favre, with everything that happened, the super, you know, they loved Brett Favre. But when Mike McCarthy came out and said that train has left the station and let him go, it was an uproar. You didn't know if it was going to work out all right. Now, you get to watch these guys in practice all the time. It's hard to say that you thought Aaron Rodgers would maybe be statistically the best ever. But did you know that he was really special? And how did you come down on that?
I knew he was special. I said that draft day. I had had an opportunity when I was working for ESPN doing Big Ten games. On one Saturday, while playing for Cal, Aaron Rodgers started against Illinois at Illinois against a very good Illinois defense and just shredded them. And at the time, you know, I was working with an analyst by the name of Randy Wright, former quarterback in the league. Matter of fact, he started for the Packers for a couple of years and had played at Wisconsin. And, you know, he was very impressed with him. So I kind of kept an eye on Aaron Rodgers the following 2 years. And you know, when the Packers drafted him, I remember that we were doing one of these draft shows and there were some boos. And because the Packers needed a defensive lineman or defensive end pass rusher, they didn't need another quarterback. Brett had just announced he was coming back. And the people weren't too happy. And I said, hey, listen, folks, wait. Hey, you know, just wait on this kid. He's going to be a heck of a player. And this is a great draft pick for the Packers. And, you know, that's one of the few times I've been right about something like that.
People wonder and they ask. You've been in both places. Granted, at least at this point, the caliber of football is something the Bears would want to emulate. But as far as food, we've got it on you up there, outside of the Brett Favre Steakhouse or the Olive Garden. You miss Chicago, right? You get back here and you eat on a regular basis.
You know, Chicago has so many great restaurants. It's amazing. You know, we have great food in Wisconsin. Don't get me wrong. We really do. But, you know, you look at Chicago. The thing about Chicago that's interesting is that there's a steakhouse and a good one on every corner in Chicago. That's the amazing thing about that town. But the one thing I really like, I love Lou Malnati's pizza. And we get some sent to us by a friend down there every once in a while. And it, even frozen, it's a great pizza. It really says Chicago to us.
Well, Rocky Rococo's, you guys have that. It can't hold
it's
a candle.
Not the same.
Don't lose my eyes. Well, good luck, Wayne. If you want to give us a little bit of a thought process as your team prepares for the playoffs, and what do you think is going to happen in the wild card games?
Well, you know, it depends on who gets here. That's the thing. But the Packers needed the week to kind of heal up a little bit, especially the quarterback. But Green Bay is relatively healthy, unlike the last 3 years when they've been in the playoffs. The Packers are overall pretty healthy, with the exception of Aaron Rodgers' left calf. But beyond that, this is an opportunity for them, with good health, with their people in place, to make a run. And I think it all depends on how much they're able to get out of their defense. If their defense can stop the run, if it's Dallas that comes up here with DeMarco Murray, that's going to be a challenge. But, you know, if Detroit upsets Dallas, Detroit goes to Seattle, and then all of a sudden you've got the winner of the Carolina-Arizona game coming to Green Bay, and the Packers blasted the Panthers midseason in Green Bay, and you know, Arizona doesn't have a quarterback for the most part, so that would be interesting, too, to see. But I think that what we're going to get is a Seattle-Green Bay NFC Championship game. Those are the two best teams right now. Dallas is a close third.
Based on where these teams are located, does weather play a part in how these teams play?
Sure. Oh, absolutely. You know, it has a major factor in the way they play and what they're able to do. But, you know, the thing about, I look at a team like Dallas with their defense and even Detroit, if you can run the football and stop the run, Dallas can run the football. I'm not quite sold on their defense, but they're playing it so well offensively. With the running game, if you can run the football this time of year, you can win in any kind of environment.
Well, Dallas, it seems like, is more of a real deal than they have been in years. And I think with the Packers, you're looking at with Eddie Lacy and the running game being in there, the Packers are probably as complete a team as they have been in years as well. I don't know if everybody in Chicago would agree with you, but we're going to tell you we do like what's going on the win side. We're just maybe
it hurts to say
that it's the Packers that are doing it. But good luck, guys, and all the best, Wayne.
All right, Happy New Year, folks. Take care.
Thanks so much. Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in today for Steve Cochran. We are going to be joined by Courtney Crowder next, talking about 2014 television series in review.
Dane Neal, Hannah Stanley in for Steve Cochran on New Year's Eve, 720 WGN. And the music has been, you know, I've got to commend. Bumper music isn't always just bumper music. They're not all created equal. Jasmine's been pretty great.
Jasmine's been full-on DJing this shift, and that's fantastic because it is officially the New Year's Eve show. And Pharrell, by the way, one of the biggest stories of 2014.
Yes.
Pharrell, even though this was... Okay, anyway.
But he was involved.
Well, he's singing it.
Because the other guys have helmets on. That's a muffled voice.
It would have been hard to pick them up on mic. We are joined in studio by TV writer extraordinaire, Courtney Crowder.
Thank you.
Big stuff. Hello, good morning. Huge stuff went on this year in television as far as new shows that are really, like, have a ton of traction, shows that are continuing,
right.
Shows that ended, and shows that were canceled because they weren't so great.
Right, right. It's true. 2014 was a really great year for TV. I like to talk about it as sort of the new bread and circus. it's what food sort of used to be before food became what it is today.
Before food
was
everybody.
Where we all, like, can't afford to eat it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, most people have a television and you can turn it on and there are quality shows on broadcast, on cable, and on premium channels. And, you know, most people have Netflix. The way that we're getting serialized television is so sort of the people. Anybody can watch TV these days.
Well, it's really cool to see it come from different places. You know, used to be there was just a few network channels. And on the series side, yeah, you really only had a couple outlets. But now it can come. I don't know if it's just become more accessible or if the writers are better or the equipment's cheaper. I'm not sure what it is, but you can get great TV anywhere.
Right. When I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today, I mean, my list is almost three Word document pages long of shows that I really love, kind of like, and, you know, still would recommend because there are just so many outlets to watch any sort of series that you're looking to watch.
I would say, too, that this past year has become the year of the binge watch. Everybody
Absolutely.
Is able to say, OK, I've downloaded this on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. All those we got the ability all of a sudden to mass watch programs.
Right.
So things that you necessarily weren't up on. And there's so many examples of programs like The Wire or Walking Dead and things like that, where you
Breaking Bad.
That's the one I was trying to get to, where all of a sudden it becomes something that everybody's talking about and you can go, okay, I haven't done this yet. Stop talking. No spoiler alerts. Give me a weekend and you can catch up on two or three seasons of programs, Downton Abbey being another one.
Right. And so you can join the conversation. So let's say you haven't watched, you know, an episode of Breaking Bad before last summer. Breaking Bad is unfortunately finally not allowed in the Emmys anymore. It's over.
It's over.
Let's say you hadn't watched a episode until last summer. You could catch up and then be a part of the live conversation and then be a part of the excitement.
The thing that's different about it is how things are changing. Appointment television is over. No one is going to be, or at least less people are going to be in front of their television at this point so they can see it. Everybody kind of has the ability to record things now, but shows get continued and sponsored and paid and canceled based on their ratings. Like, how is the binge watching affecting that? Whereas people are waiting. Can people on the show say, wait, everyone's just going to watch it all at once at the end? Don't judge us by what we're rated this week.
You know, that is still changing right at this moment. That's not decided because Netflix really hit with House of Cards, which was about a year and a half ago. And Netflix does not release ratings, quote unquote. They don't release any sort of numbers about downloads. You know, you can search through their
They're the Apple programming. Yes.
You can search through their corporate filings and try to find your own little Easter eggs about how well Orange is the New Black was downloaded, but they just don't release those numbers. HBO now has decided to only release the plus 7 days rating number, which is what they're more leaning towards as being the determination. But poor old broadcast is still stuck having to release ratings every day. So you have more of the media saying, oh my God, that was awful. That did so poorly. But it's truly just the one sitting.
Because currently, and correct me if I'm incorrect, and it's entirely possible, but it's within, you have to watch it after it's recorded within 12 hours for it to count.
Right.
For broadcast,
the single
for
day,
network.
Right, for the single day.
Well, and I think one of the best examples of shows that were damaged tremendously by this is Arrested Development.
Right.
Where it was critically acclaimed, it had a tremendous fan base, and it just didn't have the ratings to support itself. But then Netflix picks it up and says, yeah, we're going to do a whole nother season.
Right. Right, and it was, you know, fairly well received and reviewed on Netflix.
People joined Netflix to get Arrested Development.
Easily, yes.
Me.
Easily.
Me being one of them.
I think ratings is something that we're going to have to see where it lies, especially when you have the juggernaut of Sunday Night Football being taken down by Walking Dead. I mean, that's outrageous. That's something we've never seen before. And that's something that's for sure going to determine how ratings are calculated, how shows are treated.
People that are fans of certain shows feel kind of bad when they like a show, and certainly other people sort of agree with, maybe not enough, but when those shows are canceled on the network side, you only have so many slots, so many opportunities. But now with, you know, the internet and online things, you almost have unlimited opportunities. Are they looking at different ways to assess the values of shows, where maybe being critically acclaimed is good enough, or even product placement, as it becomes a situation where if you've got a reason to be on, regardless of how big that reason, it may not be, you know, incredible viewers, but there's a value to having you on the air and people getting it.
Yes, I would say yes, yes, and yes. For example, this season, Hulu picked up shows that were canceled. Selfie and Manhattan Love Story being two examples. They were canceled. ABC, I believe, said, mm-hmm. we're not broadcasting these shows anymore. And Hulu's like, well, you know, if you liked them, come pay $7.99 right. to be a part of our service and you can see the rest of them. And I think we'll continue to see stuff like that, like how much how piecemeal can we get about how we're seeing shows and where we're seeing them. I think product placement is a great one. I think they're going to do anything to figure out how to compete with Netflix, how to compete with HBO in the continuing like war since 1980 between HBO and broadcast. They're going to do anything they can.
TBS did a similar thing. Cougar Town has picked up and I think is now in their third season on TBS. It's going to be their last season, but really found success in carrying over an audience from ABC onto a cable channel.
Right. And that was so smart for TBS because it's bringing in that demographic that they specifically want, and they can, you know, outside of like baseball and stuff, they can market to.
Exactly. Suburgatory was one that was a big surprise. It was on the bubble for a long time, got canceled, and no one picked it up. And they were right on the edge of having a syndication deal, which caused a little bit of a conflict because people are like, why wouldn't you do this? You're going to have the syndication rights. You're only like 9 shows short.
Right. I think, you know, there's so much sort of trying to formulate of the answer to these things. And there's It's such a hodgepodge, it's such like a potpourri of why a show succeeds that you almost can't. Suburgatory was on the bubble for a long, long time. And you know, it probably came down to pennies. I mean, it was probably like you're in the black and
yeah, Happy Endings did a similar thing where it was, again, really smartly written, very well received, and it just couldn't make that connection with the executives. They had to make that choice. We are going to talk more with Courtney Crowder, TV writer extraordinaire, about all kinds of things, shows that got canceled that probably should have, and others that we're going to look forward moving forward. That is going to be next when we continue. Hannah Stanley and Dane Neal filling in for Steve Cochran for the next hour and 16 minutes. More after this on WGN.
720 WGN, Hannah Stanley and Daniel in for the Steve Cochran Show on New Year's Eve. Some people are going to be out having a great time. Some people are going to be out at Navy Pier waiting for confetti to fall into their drink.
They'll be hanging out with Janet Davies and Mark Giancarlo. That always happens.
Some people will be home watching some other television.
Yes, maybe even binge-watching television. And we are talking about 2014 TV in Review with TV writer Courtney Crowder in studio. Hello.
Hi.
So there have been some outstanding programs that have either launched or continued this season, and also a few that have just recently ended.
Mm-hmm. Sons of Anarchy being a huge one. Yeah, this season was marked by a couple of sort of categories, if I can. One being just the continuation of the heavy hitters. Shonda Land's block of television, The Good Wife, Walking Dead, Mad Men, Game of Thrones, Blacklist, these shows that are sort of untouchable. There's sort of like a level of show and then everybody else follows.
Blacklist being the one that is probably most attainable because it's network television. It's
and
ABC.
Shondaland, of course.
Well, yeah, Shonda just rules everything. I find a lot of her programming formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
How has that been received? I mean, Grey's Anatomy is still going strong, which is slightly unbelievable to me.
Exactly. I think, you know, you get a little jaded when you watch the show over and over and over and over. And Grey's Anatomy is not that much different.
No.
Every season, you know, it's always pretty good. But this season, we got a piece of her newest show, How to Get Away with Murder, which was incredibly well received by critics and chosen as one of the sort of only new shows worth watching. And I think it's formulaic, but it's good and it's reaching an audience.
Not me. I'm not a How to Get Away with Murder kind of girl.
Well, there's a lot of people out there that enjoy that stuff.
That's why the ratings are there.
In the different programs, there's so many more outlets. We've talked about, you know, new networks, new outlets kind of getting into the game there. And you're seeing the actors getting involved, too. So you're seeing, like, name actors who are going in places that maybe they wouldn't have career-wise in the past. How is it working dollar wise, you know, because you've got advertisers that are used to spending a certain amount of money based on a certain amount of whatever return on investment. Are people just, in order to get involved with cool projects, are they just taking less money now? I mean, if you're on like one of these alternative networks, are you really making the money of a television star?
Probably not, but you can hold on. I think there are two answers to that. I think Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson were making whatever they needed to be making to do this show.
Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson money.
I think they were making Woody Harrelson money. But was Kevin Spacey at the beginning of House of Cards? I know he wasn't. He wasn't. He took like a very large pay cut for whatever scale he should have been making. But paid off for him.
Yeah.
You know, paid off for him. Great. He's also a producer on that show. So he's just sort of, you know, banking the dollars. So I think there's a mix. I think if you're like working with HBO, you're not necessarily going to be like, yeah, I'll take that pay cut. But if it's some sort of passion project that you really care about, like Transparent, that's showing on Amazon, that they're maybe a little tenuous to take a jump. Yeah, I think people are like, okay, give me a producer credit and I'll do it.
Well, and the other thing that allows them to make money kind of on the back end is syndication rights, which we've been talking about. And a couple of the shows have, like we mentioned, Suburgatory was just shy of having that syndication amount of shows you need to go into syndication, which is around 100. But another one, Seventh Heaven, just lost all of their reruns because of controversy. And so that's going to affect everybody's bottom line in years to come.
Right. The Cosby Show as well.
There it is.
Yeah, just pulled it off, which is really disappointing because the Cosby Show itself was just such a marker in sort of racial welcomeness.
It paved roads and inroads and acceptability for some families. It really is interesting how these things are developing. Tell me the shows that people should be watching.
The show that I would say people should be watching is Hannibal. Now, I don't think this is going to be up in your alley.
No, Nick DiGiulio loves it also. Yeah. And he and I argue because I'm like, you need to watch Blacklist. And he goes, you need to watch Hannibal.
No, Hannibal is such a beautiful show, which is so odd to say, I know, because it's definitely gory. It has like a Dexter-like gore.
There's a severed arm. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, but it's just sort of the setting, the theme, the mood, the feel. It's all very gray, like as though they're all the time in sort of rain and fog. And it's just a really well-written show. They do smaller seasons, 10 to 13 episodes all the time. It's Brian Fuller, and he's able to sort of craft a narrative that makes me, who is not a horror fan, not a gore fan, totally buy into the series. Totally buy into the series.
Why? We have a texter, and it's a very interesting question because you and I could probably spend, and everybody else, an hour debating this. Why did 312? Why did White Collar end like it did? I don't think White Collar had the broad-reaching audience that everyone's going to go, oh right, I'm a part of that. It was a great show. It was well put together, and it lasted for several seasons. Had a fan base,
Seven?
Tiffany Amber Thiessen, right? You know, she drew some people onto that, but it without disclosing how it ended, it ended the way it had to.
Right. Right. I think that's interesting because USA sort of was a powerhouse, and I think they're sort of grasping to become a powerhouse again. I mean, Monk and Psych were really mainstream supported shows. I don't think White Collar ever achieved that. And I really enjoyed the ending of White Collar as well.
I did too. And I think Monk is an interesting case because it was something that was, it was formed on cable. It lived exclusively on cable. And then it became, it got picked up because it was able to be mainstream. And so I think it was ABC, it might have been NBC, started playing it in reruns while it was still being aired.
Right. The other thing that I think you can't not talk about on a 2014 TV in review is anthology series. Okay. Of course, being True Detective, Fargo, which is one of my favorites from this year, and the continuation of American Horror Story.
And you've got some kind of themes that go along with it as far as like some of the fantasy stuff, some of the forensic stuff. I don't know if there'll be a theme of multiple shows, including comedians in cars. What do you think, Anna?
I know. If we've got a caller right now asking about comedians in cars. That is Jerry Seinfeld's show. What's your comment?
Hi there. This is John in DeKalb. Yeah, John. I love that show. I mean, it's totally unscripted. It takes Jerry a week to edit it, and they just wrapped up their fifth season. What do you think of it?
You know, I have not seen every episode of Comedians in Cars. I really like it. You know, Hannah and I have often chatted about reality television, and I'm totally out of the loop on it. I don't watch any reality television, truly. But this is one of those things that's real that I do watch, and I find it really enjoyable. It's a total delve into the psyche of a person. And anybody who wants to get into the business of show is an interesting enough person to dive into.
It's a huge internet hit, as if Jerry needs to make any more money.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because you'd think that he would just spend his time counting his money, and yet he still wants to entertain. John, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. It is interesting because these are people that are so trained in being funny that it doesn't have to be reality programming. It's just a reality show, which is and that's a great trend that I would like to see going forward. So.
Yeah. What do you mean? You mean like a reality show with trained people as opposed to just train wrecks where you're just watching
exactly
people argue?
Exactly it. There or things that are being scripted that we don't know about being scripted or manipulated via editing. I understand that Seinfeld takes a week to edit each one of those, but it's probably because he's trying to cut it down for time. Speaking of cutting down for time, we have to get to a break, and we are going to continue following up with the news with Dave Schwann after this break. Hannah Stanley and Danielle, thank you to Courtney Crowder, TV writer extraordinaire. More with us filling in for Steve Cochran on WGN.